even though I enjoyed speaking at your all-night mishmar, this is a much more friendly time to speak. So my travel plans, as you said, I'm not sure if I'm traveling or not. It depends on the blizzard in New York, but in any case, I got to speak at an earlier time this year. The Rabban Shalom tells Moshe Rabbeinu very clearly by the Sneh that his plans are to take Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, to bring them El Eretz Tova or Rechava, to bring them El Mokum Haknani Vaprizi, to bring them to Eretz Yisrael. And he tells Moshe to go and tell Paro, Derech Shloshes Yomim Nelech Bamidbar V'Nizbechol Hashem Elokeinu. It's a lie. How could Moshe Rabbeinu, how could the Rabban Shalom tell Moshe Rabbeinu to lie as if that's all they want to do? They want to go 3 days in the desert, giving the impression that after that they're coming back? What does that mean? And that's all through the Makos. That's all Moshe Rabbeinu is asking for. Derech Shloshes Yomim Nelech Bamidbar V'Nizbechol Hashem Elokeinu. So first I'm going to tell you a few different explanations, and then I'm going to tell you what I think. There is a Machlokas Rishonim, the Rambam and other Rishonim, what exactly the purpose of Hachbodas Leif Paro, Chizuk Leif Paro was. The Rambam learns that Chizuk Leif Paro was to take away his Bechira. That really, Paro deserved to be punished already, to be killed, basically. He lost his right to live. And the Rabban Shalom could have killed him. But he chose to leave him alive and to use him as a pawn in order to teach Klal Yisrael, to teach the world a lesson. So Paro did not have free choice. And he was being used as a pawn. According to that Shita, the way of understanding this Derech Shloshes Yomim Bamidbar was part of Paro's punishment. Paro had to be punished, the Mitzrim had to be punished, Mida Keneged Mida. And therefore, it wasn't enough, all the Makos, but they had to be drowned in Yamsuf, Ki Badover Asher Zodu Aleihem, Mida Keneged Mida, they drowned our children and they were drowned. How do you get Paro to go to the Yamsuf? You don't send him an invitation, we'd like to invite you to the Yamsuf to be drowned. Somehow the Rabban Shalom has to get Paro to the Yamsuf. So therefore, the Rabban Shalom told him, as if they're coming back, they only want to go 3 days, and when Paro found out that he was fooled, and they had no intention of coming back, he sent messengers to see if they're coming back or not, and they had no intention of coming back, that incensed Paro, and Bederech HaTeva made him chase after them and got him to the place where the Rabban Shalom wanted him so his legions could be drowned. A little bit difficult pshat, because there's no other way for the Rabban Shalom to drown Paro. He could bring the Yamsuf to him. You don't have to get him to come to the Yamsuf. You have to lie to him in order to get him to the Yamsuf. The Rabban Shalom can't think of any other way to punish Paro except by telling a lie, and the Rabban Shalom tells us Midvar Sheker Tirchak, and Pashtus the Rabban Shalom also keeps to what his Torah is. So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh adds a dimension to this pshat, and he says no, that was part of the punishment. Because Paro didn't only drown our children and enslave us, but he did it in a way that fooled us. Avodas Perach is Perach. He fooled us into becoming slaves. And therefore, Paro's punishment had to include that too. In order to be really Mida Keneged Mida, Paro, it wasn't enough just to drown him and to punish him, but he had to know how it was like to feel like a fool, to be fooled and tricked. So therefore, the Rabban Shalom set up the Onesh of Paro in such a way that he'd be fooled, not only would he be drowned, But he would feel also what it was like to be fooled, as much as Klal Yisrael also felt like fools when he fooled them into becoming slaves. So that's one pshat. This was all orchestrated in order to fulfill the midah keneged midah, the punishment that Paro deserved, to get him to the Yam and to drown him, and to do it in a way that he would be fooled in order to mekayim the onesh for fooling and tricking Klal Yisrael. When a person is fooled and tricked and he feels like a fool, that in itself is a punishment. So that something had to compensate for that too. That is combination of the Ramban says part of this, or Achayim HaKadosh says part. That's part of one possible explanation. Second explanation. Other Rishonim, the Sfarno amongst them, says that Hachbada slave Paro, Hachzoka slave Paro, was not to take away his Bechira. Just the opposite. It was to enable him to have Bechira. If Paro's heart would not have been hardened, then there was no way that he could resist the force of the Makos. And he'd be forced to let Klal Yisrael go. And the Rabban Shalom didn't want him to be forced to let Klal Yisrael go. He wanted to give him the opportunity to make a moral choice and to let them go, because he chose to let them go. So in order to even the playing field, in order to compensate for the strength of the Makos, the Rabban Shalom hardened Paro's heart that now he had free choice. Now he could say no. And he also could say yes. Now he had free choice. According to that shita, that the purpose of Hachbada slave Paro was to enable Paro to have free choice. And Paro had free choice in letting them go or not letting them go. Then there's another reason why Paro was told Shloshes Yomim Bamidbar. Because had Moshe Rabbeinu come to Paro and said, let all your slaves go forever, that would have been something that Paro could not have agreed to. It was beyond his free choice to agree to such an intense kind of thing. So the Rabban Shalom said, go to Paro, and I want him to have choice. And tell him you only want to go away for 3 days. If you'll get him to agree to that, and he'll agree to Dvar Hashem with that, then mitzvah goreres mitzvah. Then you'll start negotiating. That's how negotiations work. Start with a little bit, right? Then a little bit more, then a little bit more. Mustami, you know how that's how you deal with your parents, right? Right? First you ask for a little bit, then a little bit more, till you get what you want. So Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to go to Paro and start the negotiations with 3 days in the Midbar. That was something that Paro could conceivably agree to. And if he'd agree to that, then they would make further negotiations, and mitzvah goreres mitzvah, maybe it was possible for Paro to agree. That's a second possible explanation of the Shloshes Yomim Bamidbar. The third possibility. And that is something that Rabbi Yonason Eibshitz says, and Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky enlarges on. And that's the following. He says that really, that's what they wanted to do. They only wanted to go 3 days in the desert. That which the Rabban Shalom told Moshe Rabbeinu, that he's taking Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, bringing to Eretz Yisrael, was the final goal, but not now. At this point, they were supposed to be in Mitzrayim for 400 years. Geri Yezaracha Beretz Lo Lohem Vavodum Ve'inu Osom Arba Me'ev Shana. And it was only 210 years. And therefore they were leaving early. And they weren't supposed to leave, because it was important that they stay in Mitzrayim for another 190 years. And had they stayed another 190 years, there wouldn't have been any need for any other Golios. All the Indian of Golis would have already been benefited by those extra 190 years. Because they left 190 years early, those years that they didn't serve had to be spread over Jewish history. And even though it's been a lot more than 190 years, but when you have a seed, or you have the DNA, it's very, very microscopic. But that same microscopic things, when they are enlarged, right, beyond the seed, beyond the roots, they are very, very big. So these were the roots of Klal Yisrael. There, 190 years would have sufficed. When it wasn't in the roots anymore, then it spread over thousands of years. So really, Klal Yisrael should have stayed in Mitzrayim another 190 years, except that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that they were becoming so assimilated that there wasn't going to be any Klal Yisrael left if they waited another 190 years. So he went to Paro, and this was the original plan, plan A. Go to Paro and ask for 3 days in the Midbar. That's all. Just 3 days in the Midbar for a Shabbaton. That's all. Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron, right, they're going to have tremendous chizuk, have a lot of speakers over there or whatever, and a lot of ruach, and they'll have a nice havdalah, what's it called, ceremony at the end of the 3 days, and then they'll go back to Mitzrayim. And what will that benefit? That those 3 days will give them the koach to remain another 190 years and not be lost completely. That was what they wanted. Had Paro agreed, that's what would have happened. But because Paro didn't agree, and he made things worse, so the Rabbanu Shalom exercised plan B. Plan B was to take them out at that point and to spread the other 190 years over thousands of years of Jewish history. Says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, or says Rabbi Yonason Apeshitz, that's the same thing that happened with Bayesheni. Really, Klal Yisrael should have been in Golis from Golis Bavel till Mashiach comes. There should never have been a Bayesheni. And many Rishonim learned that Bayesheni was not a Geula. It was a Pekidah. That's why many of the Gedolei Yisrael, the Gedolei HaAmoraim, stayed in Bavel. Because it wasn't a Geula. So, what was it? It was a Pekidah. The Rabbanu Shlom saw that if they remain in Golis without any change till Mashiach comes, there's not going to be any Jews left. They were assimilating at a very, very rapid rate in Bavel, intermarrying, forgetting the Torah, and the Rabbanu Shlom therefore said they need a chizuk. Except now the chizuk wasn't 3 days. Now the chizuk was 420 years of chizuk. With the second Beis HaMikdash, it was only there to give them a chizuk so they could go back into Golis and remain there till Mashiach comes. It wasn't a geula. It was just a chizuk. That 420 years gave them the chizuk. That's why Dafka, the weak ones, who did Ezra take? You learn Kedushin, right? Who did Ezra take into Eretz Yisrael from Bavel? All the psulim. All the people who intermarried. They were the ones who needed the chizuk. The Gedolei Amoraim stayed in Bavel. It wasn't the Geula. They didn't need the Chizuk. Only the ones that needed the Chizuk went and built Bayesheni, and that's why during the Tkufa of Bayesheni they made all the halachas of separating themselves from the Goyim, Bishulakum, Stam Yenom, all those halachas, all those gzeiras were made during the Tkufa of Bayesheni, so they could go back into Golis and remain and not be lost till Mashiach comes. Says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, that's the same thing that happened after the Holocaust. The Rabbanu Shlom saw after the terrible Holocaust that many, many Yidden were ready to give up. And many Yidden didn't want anybody to know they're Jews. They hid their identity. They totally assimilated amongst the nations of the world. They were totally downtrodden and meyuish. So the Rabbanu Shlom gave the world, Medinas Yisrael, that Jews should feel proud. We have a Medina too. And it's Dafka for the weaker ones who needed that. The ones who their whole Jewish identity is identified with Medinas Yisrael. Buy Israeli bonds and visit Israel and feel proud. Until the Yom Kippur War, this was true. After the Yom Kippur War, it's not so sure that that's the case. Because many of the assimilated Jews don't look proudly at Medinas Yisrael, but just the opposite. They're ashamed of Medinas Yisrael. They're anti-Israel. The leftists and the assimilationists. But in any case, it still holds true to a certain degree. And therefore, Medinas Yisrael was a chizuk that Jews at least should remain with some kind of Jewish identity till Mashiach comes. And therefore it was specifically for the sake of the weaker ones that the Medina played its greatest part. That's what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says based on a Rabbi Yonason Apshitz. According to all these pshatim, either this was something that never was supposed to be, or something that could have been but didn't happen, but the Shloshes Yomim Bamidbar was not a reality. I want to tell you what I think. That not only was that all they wanted, that's all they got too. That's all they did. Exactly what they said. Want to go 3 days in the desert, and that's all that happened. They went 3 days in the desert, V'nizbech al Hashem. Let me explain to you what that means. Start with another question. Torah says, U'moshav b'nei Yisrael b'mitzrayim, shloshim shana v'arba me'o shana. When they translated the Torah into Greek for Talmi Amelech, they changed that pasuk in the Greek. All of the 72 Zakenim who were in different cubicles, couldn't converse with each other, B'neis made the same changes. There were other changes too. This is one of them. Why? Because it's not true. We weren't in Mitzrayim 430 years. And it's not something that's just, you know, a medrash that says it. You can see in the Psukim, Rashi says, that we weren't there 430 years. Because we know that Levi was one of those that came down to Mitzrayim. And we know exactly how long Levi lived. We know how long his son Kahas lived. We know exactly how long Amram lived. And we know that Moshe Rabbeinu, his son, was 80 years old when they left Mitzrayim. If you take the entire lifetime of Levi, the entire lifetime of Kahas, the entire lifetime of Amram, add to that 80 years of Moshe Rabbeinu, it doesn't equal 400 years. So they couldn't have been in Mitzrayim 400 years because these people didn't live consecutively, they lived concurrently. So even if you add it from one end to the other, it doesn't come out to 400 years. They couldn't have been in Mitzrayim 400 years. Only Mitzrayim 210 years, like we said. So in order that Talmi HaMelech shouldn't say that the Torah is not true, it says here they were in Mitzrayim 430 years, I can make the cheshbon that they couldn't have been there 430 years. So they added in the Greek a few words. U'moshav b'nei Yisrael b'mitzrayim v'shara rasos. They were in other lands also during that time, not only in Mitzrayim. Okay, very nice. So those who have the Greek translation of the Torah have no problem. Except we don't have the Greek translation. We have the original Hebrew. In the original Hebrew it says, U'moshav b'nei Yisrael b'mitzrayim. How do we understand that pasuk? How do we understand that pasuk? It says, Meferish U'moshav b'nei Yisrael b'mitzrayim. If you look at the pasuk, I think that it's very clear the answer. Listen to the beginning of the pasuk. U'moshav b'nei Yisrael b'mitzrayim, shloshim shana v'arba me'o shana. The end of the pasuk. Vayehi mikeit shloshim shana v'arba me'o shana, yotzu tzivos Hashem mei eretz Mitzrayim. What's the difference? The beginning of the pasuk says Mitzrayim. The end of the pasuk says eretz Mitzrayim. There's a difference between eretz Mitzrayim and Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is a state of being. Min ha-netzar korosi ko. Mitzrayim is a state of being that can be anywhere in the world. Eretz Mitzrayim is a place, a geographic place. Now let's discuss what this Mitzrayim is. What is that? Min ha-netzar korosi ko. Mitzrayim means narrow. Tsar. Narrow. It means when a person is constrained, constricted, sequestered. He can't express his essence. He's enslaved. His potential is enslaved. That's called Netzar. He's narrowed. He's hemmed in, constrained and constricted. What does that mean? What is this constrained and constricted? When is a person in this matzav of Netzar? The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Ein lecha ben chorin ela misha osik batorah. You want to know what chirus is? Somebody who's immersed in Torah. That is, Ein lecha ben chorin ela misha osik batorah. Now, I agree that learning Torah is a very, very special thing. Very great, reaps tremendous rewards. But freedom? Person who's immersed in Torah is free? You know, in the colloquial jargon, we call people who are not frum, freie Menschen. Free people. Why? Because they're free to do whatever they want. They can eat what they want, they can dress like they want, they can go where they want, they can listen to whatever they want, they can say whatever they want. They are free. We're free. Can't eat this, can't dress like this, can't go there, can't say this, can't hear this. That's freedom. So, okay, we're not free. But we have a tremendous benefit in not being free. But how in the world do Chazal say, Ein lecha ben chorin lemi she'osik b'Torah? Real freedom is us, Eisek HaTorah. Why is that freedom? There is a Chazal that says the following. Ritzoneinu lasos ritzonecha. Deep down, every Jew wants to do Ratzon Hashem. His neshama knows that's what's good for him. And that's what he wants to do. There's a portion of everyone's neshama, no matter who you are, no matter how far you've strayed from the Torah, that can never be contaminated, that can be never be blemished. It remains kodesh v'tahor, and it's screaming, Ritzoneinu lasos ritzonecha. Yair Lapid has a part in his neshama that's screaming, Ritzoneinu lasos ritzonecha. So why doesn't he hear it? Mama Akev. So why, if we have a part of our neshama that can never be contaminated, why don't we do Ratzon Hashem all the time? Mama Akev, says the Gemara, Seor Shebi'isa V'Shibud Malchios. Two things. The Yetzer Hara and forces from the outside that don't let us listen to that voice on the inside. Inside forces called the Yetzer Hara, outside forces called Shibud Malchios. And Shibud Malchios does not just mean that Goyim stand over us with a whip and say, don't eat that matzah, don't keep Shabbos. There's a more subtle kind, and perhaps the more dangerous kind of Shibud Malchios. Yetzer Hara is within, is the normal taivas that people are born with. That's the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara can be used for the good. You can take those same taivas and use them for the good. B'shnei Yetzarecha, b'chol levavecha. That's called the inner Yetzer Hara. Normal taivas that people have that prevent one from doing Ratzon Hashem if you follow those taivas in a wrong way. Shibud Malchios can mean a different kind of taiva. Example. There are many examples, but this is a very powerful one. There is no Yetzer Hara that one is born with to buy torn, faded blue jeans for $300. No one is born with a desire to do that. So why do people do that? Why do people buy what they can get from the Salvation Army for free? Right? Why do they buy worn out, bleached, torn blue jeans for $300? The answer is, that's called Shibud Malchios. That's cultural slavery. Because that is the fad. And everybody does it, so I have to do it too. So I'm sure that it's not a Yetzer Hara from within. There is no Yetzer Hara within that anybody is born with to do that. It's a cultural slavery from the outside. That's also called Shibud Malchios. So those are the two things that prevent a person from keeping and doing Ratzon Hashem. That's not just a nice idea. It sounds very nice. Oh, we're really inside. We really want to do Ratzon Hashem. But the Yetzer Hara, prevents us from doing it. And for outside forces prevent us. It's not just a hashkafa, nice idea. It's a halachic idea. The Rambam brings this out very clearly. It's a Gemara in Bava Basra, but the Rambam explains it very, very well. It's halach in Gittin, that if a person gives his wife a get, they write it, they sign it, they write it perfectly, beautiful get, But the man is coerced in giving that get. He doesn't want to give it. He's forced to give it. It's a puzzle get. It's like he gave her a bazooka bubblegum comics. It has no validity at all. The woman's still married. But there is a case when you can force somebody to give a get. If the halacha says he has to give the get. Example, Mr. Cohen is a Cohen, and he happens to marry a divorcee, a grusha, which is usur. The marriage is a marriage. He has to get a get, but it's usur for him to live with her. So in the time when Beis Din had the koach, they would call Mr. Cohen in and say, Mr. Cohen, we see this chasna invitation that you got married to this woman and we know she's a divorcee. You know that she's usur to live. You're usur to live with her. You have to get a get. You have to divorce her. He says, "Yeah, I know that, but I don't care. I like this lady, and she's going to remain my wife. And goodbye." They said, "No, goodbye. Lock the doors." Say, Mr. Cohen, you are not leaving this Beis Din until you give this woman a get. He said, "Well, I don't want to give her a get." It's okay. Grab him. They grab him, tie his hands to a pole. And a little guy comes out with a whip. They say, Mr. Cohen, you know what that is? That's a whip. And we are going to beat you until you give this woman a get. He said, I don't want to give her a get. You sure? I'm 100% sure. Okay. Beat him. Okay, they start hitting him with a whip. They say, Mr. Cohen, maybe you change your mind. Maybe you'd like to give your wife a get. No. Beat him again. The guy is now a bloody pulp on the ground, almost dead. They reach down and whisper into his ear, Mr. Cohen, maybe you change your mind, you would like to give your wife a get. He says, you know what? I think I'd like to give my wife a get. Fine, tell the sofer to write the get, tell the Adam to sign it, give it to her, mazel tov, you're divorced. And it's a good get. Why? Who are we fooling? Mr. Cohen does not want to give his wife a get. He wants you to stop beating him. How in the world can you give a get, Meratzon, that's being beaten into you? Who are we fooling? Says the Rambam, when Mr. Cohen came to Beis Din, he wanted to give his wife a get, deep down. Because Ritzoneinu la'asos Ritzonecha, except the Yetzer Hara superimposed other wills on top of that. His real will is deep buried within him. It's there. We just have to uncover it. We don't have to change his mind. We just have to beat away all the things, the impediments that are preventing that real desire to come to the surface. If we'd be changing his will by beating him, that you can't do. That's called coercion. We're not changing his will. His will is there, except it's covered with other wills that the Yetzer Hara would like him to think he wants. So we beat that away. And we let his inner will come to the surface, and that's what he really wants to do. It's halacha, and the woman is now to marry anybody she wants. We're not, if not, who are you fooling? So it's real that every Jew deep down wants to do Ratzon Hashem. And when you beat him to do that Ratzon Hashem, you're just taking away the outside desires that cover up his real desire and letting his real desire come to the fore. That's Avdus and Chirus. I always like to imagine it the following way. And if this insults somebody here, I apologize. But it doesn't apply to me, so I love to give mishalim that don't apply to me. I don't smoke. Baruch Hashem. Somehow I never got that yeshivish, machala of smoking. I once smoked when I was about a little younger than you. I was in a mesifta in Miami, and for some reason my rebbeim did something that I didn't like, and I wanted to rebel. So I decided I'm going to start smoking, and that will be my rebellion. So I went out, and I bought what I thought was a pack of cigarettes, but it was a pack of cigarillos, cigars that looked like cigarettes. And I sat down in the Beis Medrash about 10:30 at night. I was the only one there. And I was hoping my rebbeim would walk in and see me smoking there. And that would be my rebellion. I'm not exactly sure what I was thinking, because both of my rebbeim were chain smokers. So, to this day, I really don't know, what in the world was I thinking? But in any case, that was, so I lit up this cigarette and inhaled it, and I thought I was going to die. I started choking. Nobody else was there. I thought I'm going to die in the basement. Nobody's going to know what kind of rebellion is this. So I decided that that is not the way to rebel. There must be much more pleasurable ways to rebel, and I got rid of the cigarettes. So this doesn't apply to me. But somebody who is addicted to cigarettes, I always like to picture the cigarette as the, or the nachash, the original nachash, in my mind, was like, you ever eat Planters peanuts? There's that logo of the Mr. Peanut with a monocle and two legs. That was the nachash. Imagine the cigarette having a whip. And if you'd ask any normal person, do you really want to smoke? They would say, of course not. Right? Smoking is dangerous. Who knows what kind of diseases you can get. Right? Gives you a cough. It makes your teeth yellow. Why in the world would anybody want to smoke and pay for it? Yeah, too. It's like walking into a burning building and inhaling and paying for it. Yeah, too. So why do people smoke? Because it's pleasurable. Because the cigarette says, smoke me. And even though deep down the person doesn't want to do it, really, if you catch him in a time when he doesn't have that taiva, right, he would for surely say that intellectually, I want to stop this, but I can't. So that means he's a slave to that cigarette. Imagine the cigarette has a whip in its hand and says, smoke me. And you have to smoke because you're a slave to that cigarette. That's slavery. Slavery is not being able to do what you really want to do. And only a person, Barasi Yetzirahara, Barasi Torah Tavlin, only a person who's immersed in Torah, and the more immersed you are, the more free you are. Because you can really do what you really want to do, not what you think you want to do because the Yetzirahara or Shibud Malchus tells you want to do that. That's Ein Lecha Ben Chorin, Ela Misha Osek BaTorah. That is real, real freedom. Real freedom is being totally subjugated to the Rabbanu Shel Olam. That's real freedom. Let me tell you what that impacts on the Seder. Never bother you. We start the Seder with the matzah, which is a symbol of avdus. And says the Ibn Ezra, we ate matzah in Mitzrayim, because matzah was the food they served to slaves, because it's economical. It's only flour and water, no additives. It's made very quickly, so there's no labor factor to add in. And it doesn't digest quickly, so you don't eat too much of it. I'm sure the matzah I ate Pesach is still in my stomach. No shiloh. So it's a very economical food. Something has changed over the years. And today, the reason it's called lechem oni is because that's what you are after you buy it. But used to be, this is the things that used to serve slaves. That's how they served prisoners. So we ate that in Mitzrayim. Okay, so that's how we started the Seder, with this lechem oni that we ate as slave bread. And now we finished the Seder, now we went, may avdus lecheiros, and what do we eat to represent our freedom? Matzah. Doesn't make any sense. If you asked me to design the Seder, I would have done it differently. I would have started with matzah, holachma anya, but I would have ended the Seder, not with nafi koman, eating matzah again. I would end with 7-layer cake, right? Strawberry shortcake. That would be the symbol of freedom, right? Matzah, that's a symbol of avdus. This is a symbol of freedom. Start with the matzah, end with the 7-layer strawberry shortcake. Why do we start with matzah and end with matzah? Because, as the Gemara says, Meikara avdei deparo, the hashta avdei dehakadosh baruch hu. We're still avodim. We're still eating slave food. We did not become slaves. The difference is, who is the master? In the beginning, we're slaves to Paro, that's real slavery. In the end, we're slaves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's real freedom. Real freedom is being a slave to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's real freedom. You want to know what freedom is? Osik BaTorah. Immersed totally in Torah, you're free. Because then you can do what you really want to do deep down inside, and you don't have a Yetzer Hara, you don't have a Shibud Malchios telling you what to do. You're doing what your neshama really knows is good for you, and that's real freedom. That's a really free person. That's what it means, Ein Lecha Ben Chorin, Ela Misha Osek BaTorah. Mitzrayim is a is a state of being where a person is narrow, constricted, constrained, and his Yetzer Hara, his Shibud Malchios, like we explained it, either forces from the outside or taivas from the outside, don't let him do what he really wants to do, so he can't express his essence. He's narrowed, he's constricted, he's constrained. Min ha-meitzar karosiko. Klal Yisrael were in that state of Mitzrayim for 430 years. From Bris Bein HaBesorim until Yitzias Mitzrayim, we were in the status of Mitzrayim. We weren't in the land of Mitzrayim, the place in the world where that feeling of constraint and constriction, where Shibud Malchios and the Yetzer Hara were the strongest, was Eretz Mitzrayim. It was the Makom Tuma, and the Shibud was the strongest. Nobody, no slave ever left there. So both the Shibud Malchus and the Seor Shebe'isa were the strongest in that geographic place. That's called Eretz Mitzrayim. So Umosha B'nei Yisrael B'Mitzrayim, we were in Mitzrayim, constrained, constricted, we couldn't express our essence for 430 years. In the end of the 430 years, we left Eretz Mitzrayim, where we were only 210 years of that 430. That's the meaning of the pasuk. It's interesting. What is the opposite of Mitzrayim? Min ha-meitzar korosiko, anoni ba merchavko. Merchav. You're wide open. You can express your essence. You're not constrained and constricted and narrow. You're very, very wide. So that is a state of being. Where is the place in the world? Just like Eretz Mitzrayim is the place where the status, the state of being of Mitzrayim is the strongest. Where is the place in the world where the state of being of Nerchavka, Anoni Banerchavka, where is that place? Eretz Yisrael. What's Eretz Yisrael called? Eretz Tova Urechava. Really wide land. Now let me ask you a question. You all come from America, right? You're familiar with Rhode Island? This land is not as wide as Rhode Island. Surely not as Texas or any other place. Right? I was once a tourist here. Came before we moved here, about 2 years before. And when I came as a tourist, I remember, this was about 33, 34 years ago. We were in a taxi cab traveling from Yerushalayim to Tel Aviv on the Kvish HaMahir, the superhighway of Israel at the time. Okay, the highway that exists now, except then, the whole highway was two lanes on each side. Two lanes going to Tel Aviv, two lanes coming back from Tel Aviv. That was the highway. So we were in a cab, and the cab driver was driving at least 300 miles an hour, and looking at us and talking to us at the same time, which I said, wow, it must be that these cabs have like automatic pilot, that he can be looking at us and driving at this speed and not looking where he's going. In any case, he turns to us and he says to me and my wife, you're Americans, aren't you? I said, very perceptive, since we're talking English with an American accent. He says, tell me the truth. In America, they have roads as wide as this? I couldn't resist. I said, yes, we do. We call them one-way streets. That was the end of his conversation with me. I had a shliach, Aliyah, who was helping our moshav in America. And he had to drive me on a Friday afternoon from Brooklyn to Staten Island. To get to Staten Island, you have to go over the Verrazano Narrows Bridge. Before you get to that bridge, there are a few highways, the Belt and a few other highways that converge together. And in one place, there must be at least 9 or 10 lanes on each side. Okay? So this guy's driving me to Staten Island. It's getting late. And all of a sudden, he pulls the car over to the side of the road and stops it. So I said, are we having car trouble? Why did you pull the car over to the side of the road and park in the middle of the highway? He says, no. I made a wrong turn somewhere, and I'm somehow in this parking lot, and I'm trying now to figure out how to get out of the parking lot and get back on the road. I said, this isn't the parking lot. This is the road. He never saw a road that wide in his life. So how in the world does the Torah have the chutzpah to call Eretz Yisrael Eretz Rechava. It's a nice place, right? Eretz Kedosha, but Eretz Rechava? What kind of wide... But that's the idea. Just like Eretz Mitzrayim isn't a narrow country, but it's a place where you're narrow. In Eretz Yisrael, the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is Eretz Rechava. If you want to, this is the place where you can follow your Yetzirah Tov. This is the place where Avira de Eretz Yisrael Machim. This is the place where you can really be immersed in Torah. This is the widest land that exists, Ruchnius-wise. Here you can really be wide. Here you're not sikfetched. Here you're not constrained and constricted. So that is what real chayrus is, recognizing that being an eved to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and to be an eved to the Ribbono Shel Olam means, the more you're immersed in Limud HaTorah and Shmiras HaNitzvos, the more of an eved you are to Hashem, the more then you can do what you really want to do, and express your real inner essence, and not be a slave to the Yetzer Hara and a slave to Shibud Malchios. One more Hakdama, and then we'll see what happened in Mitzrayim. We do not redeem ourselves. HaKadosh Baruch Hu redeems us, which is pretty obvious since we make a bracha, Goal Yisrael, Goel Yisrael. The Ribbono Shel Olam is the Redeemer. We don't redeem ourselves. Not as it says in the famous Hanukkah song, in every generation the Jews arise to redeem themselves. We don't redeem ourselves. HaKadosh Baruch Hu redeems us. So what do we do? What we have to do is deserve to be redeemed. That's what we do. Do you ever wonder, there's a machlokas the whole year, whether maskirin yitzias Mitzrayim balelos or not. Yeah, machlokas. What's the svar of the machlokas? Because we didn't go out of Mitzrayim at night. We didn't go out of Mitzrayim till the daytime. So why should you be zocher yitzias Mitzrayim at night? Didn't happen at night. The svara of the one that, yes, maskirim yitzias Mitzrayim balelos, potentially we could have gone out at night. Because at midnight, Paro said, get out. And Moshe said, nothing doing. We're not leaving here like thieves. We'll wait till the morning and leave like mentioned. So they didn't actually go out till the daytime. But they had the potential to go out at Chatzos. Okay? So that's a machlokas the whole year, whether maskirim yitzias Mitzrayim balelos or not. When is Seder Pesach? Davka at night? And dafka before chatzos. Isn't it a little mud? The whole year we have a machlokas, whether maskirin yitzias Mitzrayim balelos, and the only reason is because what happened after chatzos. And here the whole Seder has to be finished by chatzos. There's no geula. The answer is, Leil Pesach, we relive our part of the geula, not the Ribbono Shel Olam's. He doesn't have to relive it. We have to relive our part. What was our part? Make Korban Pesach and Bris Milah deserve to be redeemed. You're not the Redeemer. You have to deserve to be redeemed. So we relive every year what we did. We eat Korban Pesach and we eat matzah and maror. So we'll deserve the geula that the Ribbono Shel Olam brings. The Ribbono Shel Olam is the goel. We, our part is to deserve it. Now let's go back to Moshe Rabbeinu and to Shloshes Yomim Bamidbar. The Ribbono Shel Olam told Moshe Rabbeinu like this, I'm going to redeem the Jewish people, I'm going to take them to Eretz Yisrael. I don't have to tell Paro about it, I don't have to ask Paro's rishus, I'm not mishubit to Paro. I have to ask Paro, please let my people go, right? I don't have to ask him anything, I don't have to tell him anything. I'll do what I want. But you're his slaves, so you have to ask him to let you do your part. What's your part? Your part is not to redeem yourselves and go to Eretz Israel. Your part is to be fit to be redeemed. How are you going to prove to me that you're fit to be redeemed? You ask Paro to go 3 days in the desert and make a sacrifice to Hashem. That's all. Now Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know what this sacrifice was. I'll prove it to you. Because he told Paro, we have to take all our cattle with us. Why? God didn't tell me what he wants. What kind of sacrifice? This kind of animal, that kind of animal, 100, 1,000. We have to take everything. Because I don't know what it means. The Ribbono Shel Olam didn't tell me. He didn't explain to me what korban he wants. So we have to take everything because we don't know what he's going to make. Maybe he'll ask us for everything. So they didn't know what it meant. V'nisbechol Hashem. 3 days in the desert. V'nisbechol Hashem. You do that, and then you'll prove to me that you deserve to be redeemed. I'll redeem you. I don't have to tell Paro I'm going to redeem you. I don't have to tell Paro anything. I have to ask him for sure. But you are his slaves. You have to ask him for permission to do your part. Your part is to go 3 days in the desert. V'nisbechol Hashem. I lechor, it never happened. Yes, it did in this week's Sedra. What happened? They left Mitzrayim on Thursday. They traveled Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. First Shabbos Chol HaMoed. And the Rabban Hashem told them, V'yashuvu v'yachanu lifnei piyachiros. I want you to go back towards Mitzrayim. They thought they're going to make some kind of animal sacrifice. The Rabban Hashem said, no, that wasn't the v'nisbechol Hashem. I want you to make a real sacrifice. You know what the sacrifice is? I want you to give up your freedom. You have 3 days of chazakah to really feel what it's like to be free. And now v'yashuvu, they didn't know that this was only a ruse. Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, we're going back. V'yashuvu v'yachanu lefnei piyachiros. We're going back to Mitzrayim. And the Rabban Shalom wanted to see what they would say. If they said, Rabban Shalom, you can ask us for anything. There's no way we're giving up our freedom. Then they don't know what freedom is. But if they said, Rabban Shalom, being free is listening to you. And if you want us to go back to Mitzrayim, then that's freedom. So we're willing to sacrifice what appears to be our freedom of action in order to do what you want. Then you understand what freedom is. Then I'll take you out. That was the test. And that was exactly what happened. They went 3 days in the desert, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. Shabbos, the Rabban Hashem said, V'nizbecha, now make a sacrifice. Sacrifice your freedom. Go back to Mitzrayim. The people accepted it, or over the people at least, and went back, and the Rabban Hashem said, fine. Now, you showed me that you deserve to be Nigal, now I'll take you out. And that, you didn't have to tell Paro anything. I have to ask Paro permission to take my people out. Right? Well, who's he? But you have to ask him to do your part. Your part was Shloshes Yomim Bamidbar, V'nisbechol Hashem. Exactly what happened, exactly what they wanted, and that was it. That's the parsha in the Torah. What does that do with all of you? You are extremely lucky. First of all, you are in a yeshiva with very, very fine rebbeim. So you are able, mamash, to immerse yourselves in Torah. Secondly, that yeshiva happens to be in Eretz Yisrael, which is Eretz Tova Urechava. So you have all of the implements necessary to be really free people. Really free. Not avodim. Not avodim to Yetzer Hara, not avodim to Shibud Malchios. To be in an Eretz Rechava, and to be Oskim Batorah, which makes you free. And is it easy? No, it's not easy. Sometimes it appears to be a tremendous sacrifice. But Lamais, is it worth it? 100%. So you now, half the winter is over, something like that, maybe a little bit more. And it gets difficult, right? It's dreary outside, and it's rainy, and you miss your parents, and you already put in so much kochos into learning, and how much more do you have? But Lamaisa, if you know that that's what real freedom is, so by Pesach time, if you put in all your kochos and you immerse yourself in Torah, and you have the opportunity to be here in Eretz Yisrael, which who knows how when that opportunity is going to come again? Don't know. Halavai will come again soon. You don't know it's going to come again. Everybody has their things they're going to do after they leave here. So you have another few months, few weeks, to be able to be anoshim b'nei chorin mamish. So when Pesach comes, you can really celebrate Zman Cheruseinu, because you really be free people. So take advantage of it. The opportunity may not come again so fast. You have a tremendous opportunity. Take advantage. Be mamnik in Torah, right? Put all your kochos into it, right? Each one according to what their potential is. Appreciate the fact that you're not only learning Torah, and not only in a fine yeshiva, but in a yeshiva that happens to be in Eretz Yisrael also. So you have all of the positive kelim to be able to be really b'nei chorin, Take advantage of it. It's good to feel a really free person, to do what you really want to do deep inside. And in that way, it'll last you for a lifetime, that you'll have that taste of what it means to be a Ben Chorin, and you'll always have that she'ifa and that tshuka to want to remain a Ben Chorin, to want to access that which you have here for your entire life. You're creating a reservoir that you're going to be able to use for your entire life. Make that reservoir deep and pure and as strong as it can be, and you will be the ones to benefit. Eventually, your wives will benefit, and your children will benefit, and your grandchildren. Ad bi'as kol tzedek, meheirav yameinu.